from the number one sports site in the world.
Yahoo!
This is Yahoo Sports Radio.
YahooSportsRadio.com.
Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Yelovich is an own goal! It's an own goal!
With your host, Joe Mago. From Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Sports Radio.
It's right! It's a landslide!
Joe Mago and all the insiders from the FC Yahoo Soccer Blog bring you coverage of soccer across the world.
Premier League,
MLS,
Champions League,
La Liga,
Serie A,
and Bundesliga. It's all the coverage from soccer across the world.
This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's good in!
Right now. From the Yahoo Sports headquarters in Playa Vista, California, here's your host, Joe Mago.
Hello, soccer fans. Yes, I am Joe Mago, editor of the FC Yahoo blog, and this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, now available on iTunes. Here with me in the Playa Vista podcasting room in Los Angeles is Shahan Ahmed.
Game blouses.
And Alex Baker.
Some people grow playoff beards. I'm growing a Griezmann mustache.
Nice. And always on Skype from New York, we have Leander Charlakens.
Shahan said before the show he has a joke to tell, so maybe now is the time.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
he'll have plenty of time to tell it. Gentlemen, we have honest to goodness title races in England and Spain. We have Tottenham Hotspur just 5 points behind Leicester City in England in the Premier League, and Barcelona is only leading Atletico Madrid by head-to-head tiebreaker. They're level on points right now. But before we get into the title race discussions, guys, I think we have to pay our respects to one of music's icons. Prince died today at the age of 57. Prince was a big, I was a huge Prince fan, and the only thing, without drawing too much of a exaggerated sports parallel, but he was a lot like Cruyff to me in that he was this transcendent talent, and the imprints of Prince's musical style is on a lot of the last however many decades. I'm just going to throw it up. What do you guys think of? What is Prince's legacy?
I think he was definitely a groundbreaking figure in the same way that Cruyff was. And as we were saying before the show, when Prince came along, what was happening, he was so very different from that in the same way that no one had quite seen someone like Johan Cruyff before. No one had really ever seen anything like Prince before. For a moment, people wanted to call him, I'm a bit older than some of the guys on this cast, so I can remember when he was sort of being written off as sort of a Michael Jackson clone at first. But then Purple Rain dropped, and it was just so apparent that he was so different from that.
Wasn't he booed off? He opened for the Stones, and he was booed off the stage.
Yeah.
It's like late 70s, right?
I think so, 79 or yep. So, yeah. So, yeah, he was a singular figure in very much the same way that someone like Cruyff would be. Terrible loss.
Anyone else want to talk Prince before we launch into our La Liga discussion?
I'll just say, it's sad news, and I'm going to party like it's 1999.
Oh, there you go. There you go. All right, guys. We have Barcelona clinging to what seemed to be an insurmountable lead over Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid. We have debated and discussed Barcelona's fall in the FC Yahoo blog. If you have not seen it, you might want to check out Shahan Ahmed's piece earlier in the week and Leander Charlakens' recap of the Barca's 8-0 win over Deportivo. So I'm just going to throw this out to you guys, and this Leander touched upon it in his blog post of the 8-0 recap. Is the Barcelona slump and or crisis really over?
I'll start. Go ahead. You just wrote about it, so go, Leander.
Well, so did you, but I'll take the turn anyway. I think it's hard to say after an 8-0 win that your slump isn't over. I mean, that's a slump buster if ever I heard of one. You know, but it was kind of a startling run of games where for three league games they lost, and the one before that they didn't win, and their lead of 9 points just kind of melted like snow in the sun to zero, to the point where we now have a legitimate title race on. You know, they looked kind of liberated yesterday, and I think what was most telling is that Neymar not as much maybe, but Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez at the very least looked energized, and it was especially Suarez who I think really got his team playing again. You know, he scored 4 goals and got 3 assists, if I'm not mistaken, which is just a ludicrous number to put up. You know, there are plenty of midfielders who would be happy to have that as their total stat line for the entire season. But he sort of got them going, and then Messi got involved late on, and it seems like Neymar is still a little bit off the pace. I mean, they've all looked tired lately, but it seemed like they had that energy again. And, you know, Deportivo La Coruña is not the greatest team in the world, but it seemed to be most of all an issue of fatigue, and I think they've gotten over that.
Yeah, I'm not convinced either as of yet, just because, you know, there are a lot of games coming, and there's going to be another one this weekend that they have to kind of get through. I think after this weekend, they get a little bit of breathing room, and then you can maybe say, okay, this may be over, and they can kind of finish off the season. But when you looked at their fixture list, I mean, it was really daunting. From May 2nd to May 20th, which was Wednesday's game, they played 6 matches. That's just about a little bit over three days between every game. And then you look at Messi and Suarez, who played on the 29th of last month. That was 4 days before they had to launch into El Clasico, which is why the whole thing I was arguing about was that was the game to rest all three of your guys coming off of international break. And those guys didn't really get a break because they played really, really difficult World Cup qualifying matches in South America where they do not take it easy. They just kick lumps out of you the whole time. So, you know, when these guys are playing, they're not getting subbed off. They're playing all 90 minutes every single time. And so, yeah, it's going to catch up to you. You throw in the FIFA ban, the transfer ban that had them as a short, you know, kind of a thin squad for the first half of the year anyway, and the Club World Cup where they had to go travel to Japan. Then you come back and, okay, Arda Turan and Alex Vidal have played a little bit, but they haven't really, you know, assumed any of these guys' roles, the main people that you're talking about. And I thought, you know, I thought Luis Enrique kind of, he missed an opportunity to be a strong manager and rest his guys during El Clasico. Now, granted, last year he nearly lost his job for resting Lionel Messi off an international break in, you know, that match against Sociedad. But he wasn't a treble-winning manager back then, and he didn't have, you know, Atletico Madrid coming up in the Champions League with two really difficult matches that, frankly, you know, if Barcelona win those matches, right now we're talking about them becoming the first team to win back-to-back Champions Leagues rather than can they hold on to La Liga.
Yeah, no, but why has Luis Enrique lost trust in Arda Turan and Alex Vidal? He hasn't really played Alex Vidal. Turan made quite a bit of an impact right after the first of the year, but has since gone missing. I mean, have you guys seen any reason why he's not trusting Arda Turan?
I mean, when you have a squad that won you the treble, it's hard to get away from them and, you know, insert other people. I understand that the whole point of buying these guys was to alleviate the pressure on his first 11, but at the end of the day, that first 11 is still championship caliber, and as a manager, when you need a win or you want to win, you're going to go with the guys you trust the most. Now, you know, going kind of circling back to what Leander was talking about in terms of the 4 goals and 3 assists, Luis Suarez has been probably the only one who's looked somewhat decent during this stretch. I mean, you know, he was the guy who got those 2 goals against Atletico Madrid, granted it was against a 10-man team. You know, In La Liga, he's only 1 goal behind Ronaldo now, and he's got more assists than anybody else. You're talking about, you know, that 4 goals, 3 assists. I think I read somewhere that was the first time that's been done since 1950. That's pretty insane. So, yeah, they do have these little spurts where they're energized by Suarez in particular, as, you know, he gets hungry, pun intended, a little bit. But really, they do as a whole just look a little bit tired, and it's not going to be fixed by just putting in Turan or one person. It seems to be kind of an issue that's squad-wide at this point, or first 11-wide, I'll say.
Yeah, I think for Turan, too, there's maybe a process of sort of integrating. If I could misquote him, I read something from what he said, something to the effect of, I did a certain job at Atletico. Here at Barcelona, other people do that job, so I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to be doing. And I know he's been training with the team, you know, since last summer, but he's only been playing with the team for a pretty short time, and training and playing matches are two different things. So I think that there's still a learning curve for Arda Turan, and I think he will come good. But I'm not convinced the Barca crisis is over. You know, beating up on Deportivo La Coruña is great for getting the frustration out, and the team they were great yesterday. But I still think that this team is paying the price for the 18-month transfer ban, and I think they're still going to be susceptible to the fatigue or whatever it is that we've seen undermine them lately.
I think they're paying that price by choice, though, because Turan, I think it's pretty telling that now for the second time there's talk linking him to China because he's sort of frustrated and he's not playing, and he's a guy who was the guy at his last club, which was a team that he helped take to the final of the Champions League. I mean, this is a big-time player. But the problem at Barcelona is that even big-time players don't get on the field unless they're really great players, because Luis Enrique just doesn't rotate his squad. Now, in his defense, you know, his front line, I would have a really hard time accepting an argument that any other front line in the history of soccer was as good as this one. I think his midfield perhaps is only eclipsed by that same midfield, but when Xavi was in it historically. I mean, he has such incredible players that he seems kind of scared to take them off every now and again. You know, I can understand to an extent not rotating your team in the Clásico, because that isn't so much a game as it is a geopolitical power struggle. You know, that maybe isn't going to be the game where you do that, even if it makes eminent sense, like Shahan argued. But it doesn't seem to matter how good his bench is. And there's so much talent on his bench with Sergi and with Rafinha coming back. And you saw even Bartra, although he's imperfect in the great games, looked really good against Deportivo, scoring a goal. There is depth there. They're just not using it. And you know, what traditionally was the difference between, or traditionally in the last decade or so, the difference with Real has been that Barca has the slightly better players at the top end, but Real is deeper, and they're willing to cycle through those players a little bit. And Luis Enrique just won't do that. And you've really seen that, I think, catch up to him, especially when his stars are South American and are commuting insane distances to play with their national team throughout the season. But this team should be equipped and able to play every 3 days. That's just what's required of a team like that.
So Arda Turan last got a start on March 20th. In a league game against Villarreal. Since then, it's been the same midfield of Iniesta, Busquets, and Rakitic. That's six straight games. And I think, you know, we focus on the front three, but if you look close, you know, Rakitic is not the same. He is not fresh. I think we focus on the front three, but there's definitely fatigue in the midfield as well. And if anyone knows anything about Barcelona, the key to them is really, you know, possession and having that midfield impressing itself upon the opponent. Would you guys agree with that? I mean, it just, from what I've seen, guys like Iniesta, who's a little up in it, you know, up in years, it's asking a lot to have a guy like him play every single game.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see it with Rakitic. I think he's had a bit of a drop-off during this stretch. But, you know, as much as Turan was brought in to fit in and kind of help the midfield, he was also meant to be that guy that kind of plays that hybrid position that mixes in and gives those
front
guys a rest.
Which is what he played at Atletico, right?
Exactly. He's more of an attacking player. He can get you goals. He can create. So he hasn't really helped on either side. He hasn't helped on the midfield side, and he hasn't helped in the attack. And, you know, we talk about Iniesta. He was the only guy that was really, you know, substituted out, the first guy off the field in that Clásico, because they realized there were big games coming out. They're, you know, they obviously did the other substitutions too. Rakitic came off as well. But Iniesta was the one where they were like, okay, we got to save this guy because we really have big games coming up. And it didn't work out. I mean, you know, going back to that Clásico, the first half, Barcelona looked good. Second half, they couldn't beat 10-man Real Madrid. Barcelona not being able to beat any 10-man team, it makes you scratch your head. I mean, this team feels like they have an extra man when they're 11-on-11. You take a man off the opposition, and they somehow give up a goal and lose that game at home. Like, if that's not tired legs, I don't know what is. They have not been able to properly press. Now, 8-0 is an amazing feat for an away game that's only been done 4 times, you know, in La Liga's history, and all 4 times is Barcelona. But it doesn't solve the greater problem. I mean, Deportivo is not necessarily a good team. I know they're not in the relegation zone, but, you know, of their home games, they have four wins in 16 going into that game. They're not going to beat Barcelona most every year. It's, you know, especially with Barcelona. I mean, it was Luis Suarez, really, right? He single-handedly beat a team, which he's done numerous times over his career, no matter what league he's been in. And he seemed like he was really determined to get Barcelona a win, and he did, clearly.
We should give full credit to Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid for actually making this a race. I mean, Barcelona falls, and these guys have you know, gotten the points to make it a race.
Yeah, for Atletico, I mean, you have to look at Fernando Torres. He deserves an insane amount of credit. No, he really does. You know, we all laugh at him because the lasting memory is him, you know, stumbling over and missing the goal, a wide open goal.
That laugh was to represent every Chelsea fan that's going to laugh.
well, here.
€50 million laugh.
listen to this, okay? Fernando Torres has 5 goals and 2 assists in his last 5 games. He scored in every single one of those games. And he got sent off in one of those, as we may all recall. Now, that second leg that Atleti won, they were missing the guy that was their hottest scorer, and they still went and beat Barcelona in a game that tells you how tired Barcelona was at the time. But yeah, I mean, Atletico Madrid, you know, we talked earlier a few weeks ago about how they just cannot score goals. How is this team going to win? They can't. Well, Fernando Torres is scoring goals for them.
Unbelievable.
Griezmann's come around and started scoring again, but really, it's Torres. Like, he is El Nino reborn all over. He's the El Nino that California never got this year.
Well, that's, you know, Simeone has a way of pulling strikers out of hats. One guy goes off on a big transfer, and suddenly there's, you know, Falcao leaves, he's got Diego Costa. Diego Costa leaves, he brings in Griezmann. Griezmann goes a little cold, and suddenly Torres is scoring. So, one way or another, Diego Simeone always seems to find a way to get the goal production he needs to get these 1-0 wins.
And this is something Atletico Madrid, actually, it's interesting to note here, has been doing for more than a decade, maybe 2 decades even. If you look at the history of the strikers they have at that club, there's an incredible succession of strikers. I mean, going back to guys like Jimmy Hasselbank and Christian Vieri, and Kiko and all these guys. I mean, it's just one great striker after another. They always manage to muster. I wonder if they have some kind of quant in a dark little basement office somewhere who finds these world-class strikers. Because, I mean, go back and look it up. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, for Atletico Madrid, the thing is, you know, you look at their old strikers, you're completely right. I mean, Sergio Aguero, Diego Forlan, I think David Villa was there for a little bit as well. You know, Diego Costa, Fernando Torres obviously was there the first time. That's how, before he went to Liverpool, before he had that whole explosion. But, you know, the thing that always intrigues me is actually their goalkeepers. You look at De Gea, Courtois. Jan Oblak actually set the Atletico Madrid record for most clean sheets. He got 21 this season. So it's actually incredible that it's not just one side and it's not just Simeone. They really probably do have somebody sitting in a basement, like, scrounging through papers and finding these guys, because it's incredible how they do not have a drop-off. And what's even better, I mean, you know, the Felipe Luis thing that happened where they sell off a guy and they buy him back at a discount. You're looking at possibly having that happen with Diego Costa. And frankly, they could probably do it with Arda Turan right now, too.
I don't know if Courtois' job is that safe at Chelsea either.
Well, I don't think Chelsea's looking to get rid of Courtois right now. But in any case, you know, they have this ability where when people are at Atleti, they seem to just be superhuman. They leave, they become human, and then Atleti can buy them back for cheaper, bring them back, and make them superhuman again. Because Felipe Luis has looked really good. He looked incredible against Barcelona. So it's just, something's magical there. It's going on, and Simeone definitely deserves plenty of credit on his, you know, what he's done.
So Atletico's level on points with Barcelona, but Barcelona, again, as we mentioned, has the holds the tiebreaker, the head-to-head tiebreaker. Real Madrid is a point behind at 78. Guys, who is the favorite now to win La Liga?
For me, Atletico. I think there's kind of close quarters, tight contests like this. I think that's what they live for, and they're going to wait for other teams to mess up a little bit, and they're just going to be there. So, yeah.
You don't think Champions League is going to impact them in any way?
I mean, that's possible. But the way they play, the way they just go out and set up and organize, get 11 men behind the ball and counterattack, I think you can do that and manage a couple different contests at once, the way they did a couple years ago. They won the Liga and came within 90 seconds of winning Champions League. So there's no reason they can't do that again in the position they're in.
I disagree. I think it's going to be Barcelona because Real and Atletico are still in the Champions League, and that means in sort of that run-in of those last few games, the load is much heavier on those other teams, and Barca can actually be rested this time around and be focused fully on those league games. I wouldn't be surprised to see them lay a few more smackdowns on some other teams and take it to the end.
I will agree with Leander, but I will say that Atletico has 3 home games left, and that definitely helps them out. They at the Calderon, they're incredible. I think that, you know, Real Madrid has 3 away games left, and away at Rayo is actually kind of a tough one, as is away at Sociedad. But, I just think that right now Barcelona doesn't have anything else to play for. So if they don't win these games, I mean, the collapse will be Arsenal levels.
That hurts.
I'm going to go with Barcelona as well. Not to reiterate what you guys just said, but they don't have Champions League to worry about, and I think that'll be enough. Guys, Barcelona also made headlines this week by announcing that Neymar will play for Brazil in the Summer Olympics, but not in the Copa America Centenario. The Copa America Centenario has been marketing the tournament with the faces of faces of Barcelona with Messi, Neymar, and Luis Suarez. What do you guys think of Neymar's decision to play for Brazil in the Olympics and not the Copa?
I mean, we kind of saw this coming and spoke about this a while ago. I have to imagine this is like the biggest fear of the tournament organizers, is that the stars don't show up and this tournament becomes basically a glorified exhibition. And, you know, with the Copa happening last year in Chile, the turnaround on this one is so quick that if Messi says, hey, I don't want to play, I'm overworked, no one would really fault him for that because it has been such a daunting schedule. I think Luis Suarez is definitely coming just because he was suspended for so long that he just wants to play for Uruguay. But, you know, the fear is right now that, hey, what if these stars don't show up? What if Brazil's other stars decide that they want to not show up? And, you know, okay, they don't. The Olympic team can only take 3 senior players, so you're obviously not going to lose everybody. But if that takes priority for, let's say, I mean, anybody else,
yeah,
it really waters down the competition. And it kind of, it's not a good look. It's not a good way to go into this tournament.
I think Brazil's still an attraction, whether even without Neymar. But if Messi bows out of the Copa, that's something different. I think people are assuming that since Messi hasn't won a international trophy or hasn't won a trophy for Argentina, he'll be compelled to play. But, you know, I haven't seen anything definitive. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on it? Could others not choose to play in the Copa?
I think it's really possible. I mean, something I heard was that Chile are kind of miffed about this tournament because they finally won Copa America for the first time ever, and now there's another one sort of the next year that's not really a Copa America, but it sort of is, and it's kind of cutting short their reign probably. So they're, you know, it's not entirely clear if they're going to send their best players, which would mean that guys like Alexis Sanchez might not come and Arturo Vidal. So that's kind of awkward there. I mean, in the Neymar case, I really can't blame them because I was just looking up when the last time was that Neymar had a break. And I think it's sometime in the spring of 2013 because he had the 2013 season in Brazil and then he came over to Barcelona, and then the summer 2014 he had the World Cup, summer 2015 he had Copa America. So it's just sort of been this continuation of stuff, and he hasn't really had a break, and he's not getting one this summer either, particularly because there's the Olympics. Of course, that's not until August, so there's a little bit of time off. But then if you were to wedge Copa America into there as well, you know, then he's essentially running for like 4 years straight before he gets a break. And I'm sure they'll come up with some other tournament to hold next summer 2017, maybe the Confederations Cup. And it just goes on and on and on. And it's been pretty obvious, I think, in recent weeks that Neymar very badly needs a break and that he just kind of needs to rest for a little while. And I think that that same calculus can be applied to other players. You could very easily argue that Messi is pretty overdue for a break as well. Suarez had a suspension, of course, but you know, it's the math on these calendars is getting pretty tricky, I think, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see more big names drop out. And it's disappointing for us over here in North America if players like that are not going to come. But it really is very hard to blame them because, you know, something has to give at some point as the schedule just gets more and more congested.
There is a belief that just having talked to our colleagues at Yahoo Brazil that this Copa America Centenario is a fake tournament, which is what the term they used. And there's also pressure on Neymar to be the hero, to help, you know, cleanse, I guess, some of the stain from the 7-1 semifinal loss to Germany in the World Cup. And that, you know, along with all the political upheaval with the President Dilma Rousseff and the corruption that's been ongoing, you know, that result still has left a bad taste in the mouths of Brazilians. And then on top of what really happened with, you know, just the window into the abject corruption with the government and the misuse of the funds. There is not, according to our friends at Yahoo Brazil, there's not a whole lot of excitement for these Olympics. And maybe this is a PR ploy. Hey, Neymar's coming. They've never won the Olympic gold medal before. And this measure of, you know, goodwill, PR goodwill, maybe, to get Brazilians excited, because ticket sales are actually, they're not happening. No one's buying tickets to the Olympic Games in Brazil, and the organizers are very concerned.
It's hard to blame the Brazilian people on this. I mean, they with the World Cup and the Olympics, they got a deal that they probably just didn't want. And the Brazilian government very badly needs to have an Olympics that the people buy into and are happy about and sort of are willing to overlook their many other transgressions for. So it makes sense to have Neymar there for them. I wonder how much pressure there was, not just from the Brazilian Federation, but also perhaps from the Brazilian government for him to participate, because he will be one of the biggest stars at the Olympics, even if Olympic men's soccer remains a fairly secondary tournament. I don't really buy that, you know, the World Cup stain is going to be washed away by Olympic gold. I don't think any amount of bleach can do that. But, you know, I understand the pressures on Neymar, and I don't think it's unreasonable for Barcelona to say you can only play in one tournament, and then for everybody to kind of go, all right, well, it's the Olympics then.
You know, the Copa America's loss could be the USMNT's gain, because you guys laugh. The U.S., if they win their group, they could play Brazil, even if they don't win their group. In the quarterfinals, so no Neymar could be advantageous to Jurgen Klinsmann. And go ahead and laugh.
Well, we're laughing. We're laughing, Joe.
All right. Let's take a break after the timeout. We'll get into the latest developments in the Premier League title race. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, direct from the FC Yahoo Soccer blog at yahoosports.com. And if you're looking for a sports radio morning show that is just a little bit more entertaining and has a little bit of fun, along with all your coverage of sports every morning, check out the Steve Zabin Show, direct from Yahoo Sports Radio.
I guess your friend Roseman here, Scott, your people, doesn't keep kosher, huh? Pepperoni and sausage.
I guess not.
Shonda.
My people. You're, a guy whose last name ends in a consonant.
You're allowed to say sausage, right? You just can't eat it.
Or is it you do what you want? But no, by the rules of kosher, yeah, you're not supposed to eat pork product.
Eat, but you can say the word.
Of course you can.
Oh, okay, good. Just check. If you were to rank your pizza meats,
here we go.
Go ahead and rank them.
Which
pepperoni?
Throw me some meats.
Pepperoni. You've got one. The
meats, right.
Canadian bacon.
That's not bad.
Two.
Yeah.
Sausage. Three.
Okay.
Hamburger meat. Four. No, wait a minute. Barbecue chicken is three. Sausage. Hamburger.
Pineapple and ham. Those are okay.
No.
Hawaiian?
Steve Zabin. Mornings, 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern on Yahoo Sports Radio. Listen live and check out the podcast of The Steve Zabin Show. YahooSportsRadio.com. It's time to get back to everything. Football and soccer from across the world. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. From Yahoo Sports Radio and Yahoo Sports. Once again, your host, Joe Ago.
Welcome back to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. I'm Joe Ago. Oh, by the way, if you heard some barking in the background in the first segment, that wasn't Joey Galino, our fellow FC Yahoo blogger. Leander, you want to explain?
Yeah, that's our little rescue mutt, Eleanor Roosevelt, who is extremely protective and who will probably bark in a short while when my wife comes home.
Well, we appreciate your dog's contribution to the podcast. So Leander's with me talking soccer, and we also have Shahan Ahmed and Alex Baker. Guys, let's get into the Premier League title race. We actually have one. Tottenham Hotspur now trails leader Leicester City by just 5 points with four games to play after Spurs posted a convincing 4-0 win over Stoke City. The opportunity to close the gap to five was made possible by Leicester's crazy, insane 2-2 draw with West Ham, in which Jamie Vardy scored but was also sent off to open the door for the Hammers. I'll just throw this out to you guys. Will Tottenham catch Leicester?
Maybe.
Maybe? That's it. End of story.
That's great analysis, I know. But
how is it out there on a limb?
Yeah, I like to take a risk. That's a hot take. I mean, I think it maybe it was out of the question not very long ago, but then I think that it's possible now. If you look at Leicester's run, and West Ham was not necessarily one of the games where we thought that they could trip up, and they did, and now you've got Vardy suspended, and you know, I think this could go down to the wire. I could see Leicester dropping a couple more points, and Tottenham are just so ahead and shoulders above any other team in England right now that I think that they're ready to capitalize on any mistake Leicester makes. So I think this maybe it won't happen, but I think it could go down to the wire between these two teams.
I will go back up the maybe, but I'll go a little step further. I say no, just because, you know, we talked about Leicester's tough running at the end of the season, but one of those three games is against Everton, and Everton just look like they're in shambles. And then the other game, I mean, that game you would expect Vardy to be back from, you know, for the suspension expects to go through Manchester United. That's going to probably be the big bogey game. You still think Leicester is good enough to beat Swansea. And then Chelsea, to be honest with you, on the last day of the season, Chelsea doesn't look like they're fighting for anything. So if Leicester can afford to lose a game and still win the title, which they can, I kind of have to give it to Leicester. Now, you know, along the way, Tottenham actually, against West Brom, you could see West Brom maybe giving them a challenge. Newcastle on the last day of the season, you know, Rafa's has them organized, so they could maybe get a draw out of it like they did with City. Tottenham, I actually expect to probably win all four of those games, but I could see a draw. You know, Southampton as well could give them a little bit of trouble potentially, but I don't really see it. I think that they'll win all four of theirs. I think Leicester will probably win 3 out of 4, and that'll be good enough to win the title. I agree with the strong maybe. That I think there is a window there. It's an opportunity. But, you know, you look at Tottenham, and they are playing just lights out right now. Their last five, you know, last five Premier League games, they've won 4 with 1 draw. They've outscored their opponents 13-1. That 1-1 draw was the one goal they gave up. Now, that's just, you know, that excludes the two losses with Dortmund that happened in between where they just completely tanked them. But Tottenham right now is just playing the best football in the league. Leicester, they need Vardy to kind of have that incision going forward, especially when he was coming back into form. You know, there are a lot of similarities for me between Vardy and Kane in the sense that they are true strikers. When the ball gets to them, they shoot. They don't really hesitate. They don't think twice. They understand that their motive when they're in the box and the ball gets delivered to them is to find a way to get that turn and get that shot off. And, you know, Vardy's done it as well as anybody. Kane has definitely been on point this year. I think that that's a huge loss. And if Vardy was there for all four of these games, I don't think there's a question. I think Leicester easily runs away with it. But with Ojoa coming in, who's not a bad player by any means, but it does probably coming in. I mean, the Tinkerman's going to have to tinker a little bit, and we're going to figure out what he goes with. These next two games, though, if they get through these with even winning, you know, one out of the two, I think they got it.
But isn't that the opportunity? I mean, Vardy, they can sit back and absorb the pressure and hit people on the counter because Vardy's so devastating, you know, and he makes the most of his chances. Ujoa, he's, you know, they early in the season when he started, they actually won a couple of games, but this is not the same Leicester. This is a Leicester that's needing these 1-0 wins, getting goals from unlikely resources. So where are the goals going to come from in the next couple of games to make sure they keep their distance with Spurs?
Well, I think that so one of the standout players for me all season for Leicester has been Robert Huth. I mean, I think from set pieces, you know, corners especially, he has just been tremendous all year long. You know, we talk about the controversy of you know, frankly, he had his shirt taken off a couple of weeks ago in the box. But the controversy comes from one of the missed calls that wasn't a penalty was Robert Huth just got tackled to the ground.
He got mauled.
Why do you think he gets mauled? Because he is the most dangerous player on a corner probably in the Premier League this season. And, you know, in terms of organization in the back, Wes Morgan has been tremendous as a captain and deserves all the credit in the world. But Robert Huth is really the guy that gave them that stability and really that credibility in the back. And, you know, you talk about these set pieces. Where did Robert Huth spend the last better part of the last decade? At Stoke City, where all they did was set pieces while he was there. I mean, it's no coincidence in my mind that he's been the other consistent attacking threat for Leicester. I think that they need to, you know, we're talking about Ojoa coming in. It might be Demarai Gray that comes in just to have that pace continue forward. And I know he's a kid. You don't really know what you're going to get out of him. He's only made a few substitute appearances. But I think that, like I said, the Tinker Man's going to tinker, and they're going to have to find a way to get goals out of these next two games or just a 1-0, and they can probably do something.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a challenge, even without Vardy, to score them. A lot of these other guys who've scored goals have been enabled by Vardy just because with his pace, he occupies defenses. He's a known threat, so it creates opportunities. Some of these other guys, and without Vardy up there to do that, then I think that Leicester might have a hard time creating these opportunities.
I think it's a psychological game at this point, and especially sort of at the tail end of a season where Leicester has 5 points, and normally speaking, with four games to go, it should be over, right? I mean, when their schedules aren't super disparate, but like we've been talking about, on the one hand, you've got Leicester sort of scrambling to still get points out of games, and you know the results are coming a little bit harder, not that they ever came super easy this season, and then they know they've got Tottenham gaining, and they're playing unbelievable football right now, and you know all those pieces are finally coming together. Really the kind of maturation of the Gareth Bale transfer, where it's like all the players they bought after he left, you know, guys like Eriksen, well, he's been good for a while, but also Lamella and all these other guys sort of finally coming good and really putting it together. And, you know, after all those years of rebuilding, really putting together a title challenge. And when you're looking over your shoulder, if you're Leicester, that's pretty daunting because you know that Spurs are probably not going to have anywhere near as much trouble getting points as they are. So it really becomes a matter of can they keep their heads cool and are there enough players in that squad who've been in a situation like this? And there probably haven't. I think they hold on to it, but I think it's going to be very, very tight.
Do you guys see Tottenham stumbling at all? I mean, just looking at their run-in, they have West Brom next at home. Then they go to Stamford Bridge against the hapless, aforementioned Chelsea.
Champions.
Champions for a couple
defending
more weeks.
Champions.
And then they're back home against Southampton, and they finish at St. James's Park against Newcastle. I don't, you know, if they're They're coming off a 4-0 win at Stoke after a 3-0 trashing of Man United. I don't see this team slowing down. I think they're peaking at the right time. But if Leicester does stumble, don't you think Tottenham... I don't see a stumble in Tottenham to...
Leicester looks a lot more likely to drop points than Tottenham
yes.
does.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the only match there that really troubles me, or not troubles me, but I think Newcastle is going to be extremely desperate at home on the last day of the season. And, you know, after having Rafa on board for a little bit, they may be organized enough to just to get even a draw. They might only need a point at that point. So I think that could be a little bit of a bogey stage. But, yeah, Leicester's head and shoulders above every team that they're facing for the rest of the season. They could smash every one of those teams 3-0, 4-0. I mean, what the job Pochettino's done there with those players and having – I mean, you know, we talk about how good Harry Kane's been this year. And I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, there's going to be talk about him moving to a bigger club this summer. I think the worst thing that could happen for him is to leave, because I think he's one of those guys that really benefits from the system. And it finds ways to really put him in positions where he can succeed. And I think, you know, credit to Pochettino for doing that and surrounding him with guys that can create for him. You know, in terms of Leicester, what they're going to do, I think that they're going to actually focus more on putting balls and service in. I think Okazaki's a good forward to get, you know, get something going. But I think if you have a Joa, he's a little bit more stationary. And I think that you're going to have to try and maybe have Albrighton put in a little bit more service from the wings. And I think that their plan of attack is going to not be the quick counter-strike, ball over the top, Vardy runs it down and outruns everybody, puts it in. I don't think that's going to work because there's no Vardy to do it. So I think it's going to be more of the methodical, you know, crossing balls in and trying to have your striker. And I think Okazaki's still going to be able to take the ball and advance it forward to launch those, you know, kind of slower attacks that have worked for them all season long.
Let's back up and talk about why Pochettino. Why would he leave Spurs?
Well, Spurs, Tottenham's never been considered in the same class as United or the top tier clubs, and that's not. I'm not trying to disrespect Tottenham by any means.
But he has Kane and emerging Dele Alli.
He's finally
making good on the Bale investments.
He has the best team in England right now. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. I think, you know, on the balance of the season, yes, Leicester's done enough to win this title. But right now, going into next season, Tottenham could buy absolutely zero players, and they come in, and they probably look like the best team in all of the Premier League. And that's regardless of Pep coming into City or anything else. I think right now, ending the season, you would say that Tottenham is the best team in England. So why would he leave? For riches and more fame, really.
Well, for the big La Liga teams. I mean, I don't know how secure the way things are going in La Liga. So Don, Enrique, one of those guys could be out of a job in the next year. And I would think Pochettino would be a guy that would be in the frame for one of those jobs, the job he's done at Tottenham. And I think that's a no-brainer. If you get an offer from Barca or Real, you don't stay at Tottenham.
I don't know that I agree, because I think we're entering into an era, as exemplified by Leicester, where there's kind of I hate to use the word parity, but where there's so much money flooding into the Premier League that you can be consistently competitive with one of the smaller clubs. And with for a while there, Pochettino was rumored to be going to Manchester United, and I just kept thinking to myself, why in the world would he want to do that? You know, the purchasing power that with the new broadcast deals, the Premier League sort of second tier clubs like Spurs are going to have, and we're going to have some annoyed fans here. But even third and fourth tier like Leicester, competition for players is going to sort of flatten out a little bit, because they're all going to be able to offer more or less the same salaries. And money is not going to be the big differentiator anymore. So at that point, why would you want to work for one of the bigger clubs with more pressure and sort of a shorter leash and more turnover managerially, when you can stay at a club like Spurs, where he's going to have an enormous amount of credit after this season? Because even if they come second, I believe that'll be the club's best performance since 1962, 1963. He's got a hugely talented young team that clearly has a lot of upside left. And I wonder if we're actually going to start seeing in the Premier League, particularly, a sort of stasis where players aren't going to be as eager to go to the Manchester Uniteds anymore. I think this summer we'll see what happens with Leicester if there's a total exodus there, because I think a club like that is now going to have the money to hold on to its players and to pay them the kind of salaries that they might expect or something close to it. So I'm really wondering how that sort of starts to shake the balance of power. And along those same lines, I don't know that it's necessarily such a no-brainer move anymore for a manager like that to go to Barcelona or to go to Real Madrid, where he might be fired after 3 months.
Yeah, on the back of that, that's exactly what I was going to say. The point is, if you go to Barcelona and you lose one match, frankly, one big match, you're out. If he at Tottenham, he could have 3 years. If he wins the title, or even if he comes in second, takes them back to the Champions League, he could be there for next 5 years, and no one's going to say anything.
Maybe. I don't know. Tottenham has a pretty high turnover of managers.
They do, but they also... I mean, Pochettino's done something that...
Certainly.
Yeah, I don't think that anyone will be short-sighted about what he's done there, what he's doing there. They never finish above Arsenal. Arsenal's in nowhere near them right now. Going to next season, you would pick Tottenham to finish above Arsenal again next year. And... the guy, I mean, Arsenal. As long as Arsenal's still there, you know, I don't see why you would think that going to Barcelona and having a 3 month stint in, you know, in the Catalan country, even if you get to manage Messi, Neymar, and Suarez for those 3 months, is worth giving up something like this where you could have longevity and, frankly, have right now what looks to be the best squad in the Premier League.
And I think that Pochettino has done another thing aside from overachieve that club boards and especially chairman like Daniel Levy, who's always been sort of responsible with this sort of thing, really love. And that's that he's not only gotten them into contention, but he's also gotten the most out of players that were underperforming. All those super expensive transfers like Lamella, he's gotten them humming again. And sort of all those investments have come good under him. And, you know, I always... think to the manager's personal lives and players as well. If he's happy with Spurs and he's got some job security and there's a lot left for him to achieve there and his family's happy there, why would you throw all that away for, you know, a brief crack at glory with someone like Barcelona and Real Madrid, knowing full well that in half a year you could have to start over again?
Guys, that's going to be our final thought. We got to go. Be sure to subscribe to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast now on iTunes, and you can find all of our insights and ramblings in the FC Yahoo blog on Yahoo Sports. For Shahan Ahmed, Alex Baker, Leander Charlakins, I'm Joe Lago. You have been listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Goodbye.